Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
But ultimately, and this is why it's so important, I think, to learn from the dying is if you want to have kind of a happy, peaceful death, you need a happy, peaceful life. And if you want to have a happy, peaceful life, you got to start thinking about what you would regret when you're dying and start working on that stuff now so you won't.
Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Game. There's no judgment, no dumb questions, just smart conversations about you and your money. So come on in and grab a seat. Everyone is welcome here. What can the dying teach you about money? Turns out it's a lot. It's an interesting question that if you're like me, you don't think about a lot on a daily basis. Sometimes it's even hard to imagine that one day I just won't exist anymore. Okay, not to get too morbid with you, but as they say, the only two truths in life are death and taxes. So I think we can learn a lot about the role money should play in our lives from someone who is dying. Our guest, Dr. Jordan Grummet, you may know him as Doc G, host of the Earn and Invest podcast, and author of Taking Stock, a hospice doctor's advice on financial independence, building wealth, and living a regret-free life, had a front row seat into many of these important money and life lessons.
And what I do notice is when people do focus on things or money at the end, it's never about the money itself. It's, I wish I made more money so I could have paid for my grandson's college, right? And so if you think about it in that terms, we're kind of using money almost as an excuse, like, let go of the money part and let's work on our relationships now. You don't necessarily need the money.
The beauty is that you can take these important money and life lessons that Jordan's learned and start implementing them today. You can focus on what is enough for you. You can work through your family's money scripts. You can decide how you want to spend your time. And you can create a relationship with money that just makes you feel good. Jordan's got a lot to share. So let's start talking. Real quick before we jump into the conversation, I just want to talk to you about the sponsors of this podcast. You know, it's my job to bring you only the best companies and products that I believe will help you live a better life, save some time and money, and help you build and protect your cash. So to do that, I personally vet every single sponsor to make sure they are Shauna approved. These sponsors help keep this show free to you and allow us to bring on some amazing guests to help you on your money journey. So here's where you come in. I need you to do me a favor and like and support the sponsors on this show that you love so we can keep this podcast growing for years. You can find all the links in the show notes to all our sponsors, along with a special code for all of our ETM discounts and deals. Thanks so much, my friend. Into the episode we go. Jordan, or Doc G as you go by, welcome to Everyone's Talking Money.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, having two names is a little complicated.
I can imagine. But it also might be a little fun, right? Like you get to have a little bit of like an alter ego.
You know, yeah, it is. So, and then what happened is I was on Facebook and they wouldn't accept Doc G after about 3 months. So I changed it to Dr. Green. So now I've kind of got like multiple names. Thankfully, I don't think I have multiple personalities yet, but we're going to try to limit that.
We're going to try to work on that, right? Well, it's so great to have you on the show. I was on a recap episode on your show, Earn and Invest, last year. And so, you know, I thought that what you talk about and your story is so impactful. You just wrote this book called Taking Stock, A Hospice Doctor's Advice on Financial Independence, Building Wealth, and Living a Regret-Free Life, all things that I think all of us want to do. So, you know, what can the dying actually teach us about money? What can we learn?
So funny enough, the answer is a heck of a lot. You have to imagine, I went through this process of becoming a doctor, and all I could think about was being a doctor until I burned out and realized that wasn't what I wanted in life anymore. And so I dove into personal finances, figuring out how I can have enough money not to be a doctor anymore. I figured that out. And what I thought was going to be that joy and passion and excitement of being done with being a doctor actually turned into trepidation and anxiety because I didn't really know who I was or what I wanted to do with my life. So I started looking out in the world and trying to figure this out. The one thing to medicine that I had held on to was being a hospice doctor, taking care of the terminally ill, because I would do that even if I wasn't being paid for it. So I'm like, okay, this is a big part of my purpose. It's what I like to do. And so I was having all these financial conversations. I was writing a blog at the time. Eventually, I started a podcast, not about how you get towards having enough money, but more importantly, what we do once we're there. And I didn't have any great answers. And a lot of times my guests, the experts, didn't necessarily have the answers, but you know who seemed to have the answers? My dying patients. And there was like this realization that when you have that moment clarified for you, when someone looks you in the face and says, you have 3 months or 6 months to live, it changes everything. And I think one of the things that it specifically changes is it drops all those barriers, right? All the things that society has told us and people have told us, or maybe we've told ourselves that are important. When you realize you're dying, you kind of let go of all that and you say, what's really important to me? Right. And so what I've learned from the dying is your last paycheck is not important. How many hours you spent in the office or even what your job title is wasn't important. What really is important to people are those things that were deeply meaningful to them. And what they regret is not spending the time, energy, or having the courage to pursue those things. And those can be things, like some people love things and collect things, and that's really important to them. For other people, that's experiences, that's going places, or taking part in different get-togethers and meetups and those type of things. And for other people, that's relationships. So for every person, it's different. But the tie-in is this idea that there were these things that were important to me and I kept putting them off and never did them. And now it's too late.
Yeah, you talk about regrets. And one thing I love about your book is you share all these stories from all of these different people and sometimes contrasting stories from like different perspectives. But I love this idea of regret. And in the book, you keep coming back to throughout all of these stories that people regretted, you know, not being able to be themselves fully or not being able to do the things that they wanted to do. And a lot of times that conversation, there wasn't a monetary component involved in it. It was more about just needing to be who they thought they were in the world.
I think we've really lost track of this idea that money is not a goal, it's a tool, and we should then use it as a tool to actually build the life we want. And so the dying don't really focus on this tool nearly as much as what the tool was supposed to get them, which was doing those things they wanted to do, being true to themselves, living out their purpose. And so, yeah, the money is not as important, but I would be remiss in saying it's not important at all. I think money can actually build a financial framework for us to live these better lives. So I don't think we should ignore it, but we should recognize what it is, which is a great tool, one of many tools to living a better life.
So thinking about this idea of, you know, hospice and being around people that are dying, I would imagine just the emotional kind of impact that has. I lost most of my grandparents before I was really old enough to know them. My grandma ended up passing away when I was like 12 or 13, but I still wasn't in the place where I could have conversations with her about, you know, like deep life stuff and life lessons. And I feel really sad to have missed, you know, getting those lessons. And, you know, I think about my parents. My parents are in the 80s, and I grew up in a financial family, and so we've always kind of talked about money and had conversations. But I know those conversations, you know, can still be hard to have. I was wondering, you know, if you had any advice, like how do we have conversations with, you know, our parents or our partners when we're in, you know, maybe these life-threatening situations about money or about impact or, you know, any of these like really touchy conversations?
First and foremost, like we don't like talking about money. In fact, it's one of the things we try not to talk about in the United States almost more than anything else. But like you said, it's incredibly important to do it. It's important to hopefully do it when we're not in the middle of crisis, right? So I think when we're in the middle of the crisis, the best thing, especially when you're talking to your parents, is to really talk about legacy, right? Because that's a very non-threatening way to talk about this. So when you're in crisis, God forbid someone's been given a terminal diagnosis or you're not sure things are touch and go, the question more is, look, mom and dad, this maybe is the first time that I've realized that our time could be limited. And I think a lot about what you want us to remember of you when you're not here. What should we pass on to the grandkids? What type of things, what are those stories you want us to tell about you? So I think when you're in the middle of a crisis, legacy is really what you want to talk about, because you want to make sure that that family member knows whether they're here or not, they will continue to be part of your life. When you're outside of crisis, maybe you're looking at your parents saying, they're getting a little old. I'd really like to make sure I can help protect them and take care of them. You know, there's some good techniques to have these conversations that are a lot less threatening than tell me about your money, who gets what, right? Because right. That never feels good. So one technique I use is it's wonderful to ask your parents for advice, right? So if you ask your parents, you know, have you met with an estate planner? Do you have a will? Are there trusts in place? That they may or may not respond to. But if you go to your parents and say, you know what? Me and my spouse, we've been thinking about having kids, or maybe we already have kids, and we're starting to look at what we need to do to protect ourselves and our kids. I was thinking about doing a will or trust. What has been your experience? What have you done? If your parents think they're giving you advice, it actually is a really great way to open up the conversation, even if you're a financial expert, even if you don't need that advice. It's a really nice door to open that ends up being a much more collaborative and friendly conversation. So I think that's a great technique. Another great technique is to point to someone you both know who really went through it. So in the book, I talk about a patient whose mom had Alzheimer's and his dad had done all the wonderful financial planning he should do for his mom. But then his dad got COVID and ended up on a ventilator. And guess what? The dad had all the financial power of attorney, but the son didn't. And so the son was confronted with this problem that his mom had Alzheimer's and couldn't make decisions. The dad who was making decisions for all of them all of a sudden had COVID and was on a ventilator and couldn't make decisions. But the son didn't have the financial power of attorney. And as anyone knows about this, getting the financial power of attorney when someone can't legally give it to you is an extremely difficult process. Unfortunately, it resolved that his dad died and then he naturally was written through the papers to get the financial power of attorney. So he's able to take care of his mom before she died also. But why I'm bringing up the story is that's a great story to tell a family member and say, hey, remember our friend James? Like, James went through this horrible thing with his parents. Geez, I hope we don't ever have to go through something like that. So it's giving an example of the things that can go wrong and then engaging your family members and saying, hey, how can we protect ourselves? So I think that's a good technique. And then the last technique, which we talked about before, is talking about legacy. So asking advice, leading with a good story, or bringing up legacy are kind of like the three non-confrontational ways to start having these conversations in a much more comfortable way. Because again, ultimately, we want to remind our family members that we want them to stay in our lives even when they're not physically here. And the way we do that is actually we manage not just their wealth, but their stories. And we manage who they are and what they leave us, both physically and emotionally.
I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding? Or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical. If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. It feels like the greatest gift if you can learn about your family's story, even if you feel like there wasn't anything impactful. But, you know, even from a money perspective, like looking back at what generations before you went through from a financial standpoint, maybe lived through the Great Depression, or, you know, I had, I think it's three great grandfather actually lived in Ireland and was one of the creators of Stanley Tools. Ended up coming to the U.S. during the Great Potato Famine in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then came to the U.S. He and his brother started Stanley Tools and brought them over to the U.S. But the Great Depression happened, and he ended up, just out of fear, selling his portion of Stanley Tools because he was just so afraid and wanted to have, you know, some sort of money. And so, you know, now our family doesn't have that. we're not part of that particular legacy. But you think about how stories like that then impact, like, that money trauma and those money fears just keep, you know, getting passed down generation to generation. And it's no wonder why a lot of us feel stressed out about money, and we don't even know maybe why we feel stressed out about money.
Yeah, those money scripts are passed down. They're generational, and they can go back many generations. What I love about legacy building is we can also turn that upside down and say, okay, not only the trauma, but what about the joy and the celebrations? Like, what about when our ancestors beat the odds and did something no one thought they could do? How do we also pass that stuff down, right? Because, again, I think that's how our ancestors live on, right? Our bodies, our minds, our souls, who knows what happens to all that? But our legacy can last and can affect generations into the future. Let's get rid of the negative stuff, the trauma and the money scripts, and let's talk about some healthy money scripts that can, you know, last for generations. Let's talk about those wins and make that a part of who we are. We can implant that into our DNA in a sense, and then it can carry on to the next generations.
I know talking about a subject like death can be scary for a lot of people, but I'm wondering, just from your experience, you know, being a doctor and being in this environment, is there a sense of peace that you see come over, you know, most people when they're in those, you know, last final moments of life?
So death is nothing new for me. My father died when I was 7 years old. So I kind of grew up dealing with this idea of death. And then even as a medical student, I volunteered at the hospice there and then became a doctor and saw death all the time. So for me, death became a natural part of the situation. Interestingly enough, I always tell people that, you know, people tend to die the way they lived. So people who lived fairly peaceful lives tend to then come to fairly peaceful deaths. And so it's not 100%. Yes, there are people who do have tons of regrets that they didn't do all these things. They get to being on hospice and they realize there are all these things they wanted to do and they couldn't do them. And sometimes we as the hospice team try to provide them the means to at least come to some closure with that, right? So maybe they weren't able to rejuvenate that relationship with their long-lost cousin, but they can get on the phone and say they're sorry, right? So it's not perfect. They didn't actually fix the relationship, but at least they can avoid some of these feelings. We try to help people do that. So there are some last-minute saves so to speak. But ultimately, and this is why it's so important, I think, to learn from the dying, is if you want to have kind of a happy, peaceful death, you need a happy, peaceful life. And if you want to have a happy, peaceful life, you got to start thinking about what you would regret when you're dying and start working on that stuff now so you won't. And so it's kind of a circular argument, but the point being is that we got to start thinking about these things now. The reason why I, as a hospice doctor, have this viewpoint is seeing it through the eyes of the dying, it's just really helpful to put things into perspective. When you're given that terminal diagnosis, it's like the cold bucket of water coming right over your head. It wakes you up. My goal is let's wake people up way before that, so they don't have to be given a terminal diagnosis to start thinking about those things that are important to them now.
I like that. I like thinking about it from that perspective. I don't know. It just makes me feel better about, you know, talking about dying. But, you know, can we reverse? None of us know how long we have. We really don't. And so thinking about it from that perspective, I think is just, it's calming for me. Another thing you talk about in your book, we've just sort of danced on this a little bit, but it's this idea, you call it, money is like oxygen, right? You say, you've got these two great stories of people dying. And then you say, you know, that day he compared money to oxygen. If you have enough, it doesn't affect your life all that much. But if you don't have enough, good luck thinking about anything else. So, you know, how do we figure out what is enough for us? And then how do we get to that place of enough?
So first and foremost, that quote was actually from a podcast episode with the great Jim Daly. He is the creator of The White Coat Investor. The idea of money as oxygen wasn't his idea per se long term, but he was using that as an example in a conversation we're having. You know, enough is a really difficult question, right? And so what I've come to realize for me, and I think it is for a lot of people, is enough only is important money-wise to get you to the point where you're comfortable and you meet your basic needs, right? And this is the whole idea of money's like oxygen. If you don't have enough oxygen to meet your basic needs, all you can think about is getting more oxygen. On the other hand, once you hit that threshold of having enough oxygen, giving you more won't necessarily do anything more for you. And in a lot of ways, money can be the same way. We need enough money for the basics. We need to be able to have clothing and shelter and a warm and safe place to live. But after that, you can look at the studies, et cetera, money itself doesn't bring us more happiness. Now, having more money and then using it as a tool to give your spouse more space and time to do things that are purposeful and that cause you enjoyment, now, then you've kind of hit on something. So I'm not going to say that all money is bad. In fact, money is good, but only as so far as it helps you create the space and time in your life to do the things you want. So then the question becomes, what is enough? And to me, the answer is really living a life of purpose, identity, and connection. So this idea of finding what's important to you in life and filling up as much of your time doing those type of things. And when it comes to purpose, to me, it's even more important that as opposed to some huge goal, like I want to get to this place, I always talk about podcasting as part of my purpose. So I always tell people, like, I can have this huge goal in podcasting. I want to have 1 million downloads a month. You know, that goal is a little bit out of my hands. Like, I can make the podcast, I can try to do a really good job, I can do marketing and those kind of things. But whether it really happens or not, I'm not sure I have a huge amount of control of. So focusing on that goal as my purpose probably won't make me very happy, but I do have control of this idea that I can get really exciting, interesting people and interview them. And I can create these conversations that I like so much that when I'm in the moment doing it, it really feels purposeful and special. Now, I still like this idea that I can go for some incremental change. I call this the climb, like what we call purpose in life. I call these different climbs we have. So for me, podcasting is a climb. It's something that I enjoy doing the process, regardless of what I end up creating in the end. But I also feel like it can make a little headway. Like I can do a better interview. I can get really more interesting guests. I can improve. Maybe I can get a few more downloads here and there. So that to me is purpose, is having these sense of climbs and doing things that we enjoy doing regardless of the outcome. And so to me, that's what enough is trying to fill up as much space in my life as I can to do these purposeful things that I enjoy them just for doing them. And so I think if we put that into perspective, enough isn't actually a number, and it's not necessarily being quote unquote financially independent. You don't have to have enough money to support yourself for the rest of your life to define enough, but you do have to have enough money so that you can start dedicating your time to doing these things you like doing. And that's kind of the point. So enough is being able to fill as much of your time as you can with things that are purposeful, things that give you a sense of identity and help you connect with those around you.
I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. "Talkin' Money" under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So most people would think that, you know, becoming a doctor is like the pinnacle, right? We reach the pinnacle. We've, you know, made our parents happy. They can brag about us. We're a doctor. And, you know, you talked a little bit earlier about you reached a point where you got burnt out and, you know, you turned to to personal finance, learned everything you could, started your podcast, Earn and Invest. You know, tell me a little bit about that transition, that moment of realizing this is something that, you know, being a doctor is not something I really want to do anymore. I want to go in this other direction.
So it's funny, like being a doctor is kind of everyone's families and their dream, but in a sense, it's something that I realized, you know, this is society's expectations, but it wasn't necessarily lighting me up inside. So my father died when I was 7. He was an oncologist, a cancer doctor. And I think psychically, because my father died when I was so young, I almost felt like I was responsible. And somehow by taking his place, I could fix this horrible thing I'd done, which obviously wasn't the case. But, you know, being a 7-year-old, you tend to look at things through your own lens of you being the center of the universe. So I got into this whole career path because I thought it could psychically solve something that I had very little control over in my life. But I'll tell you, it was very purposeful when I was younger. This idea of becoming a doctor, I was very passionate about it. And for many years, I was excited about practicing medicine. But a few things happened. One is the practice of medicine just wasn't filling me up. Like, I was doing lots of paperwork. I was working really long hours. And it just didn't feel like I was helping people anymore, even though they felt like they were being helped. To me, it just became a job. So it wasn't really filling me up. The other thing was there was this stuff that I always loved doing, but I kind of consistently told myself, well, you can't do that for a living. So I was always trying to fit it into these small periods, these small spaces when I wasn't busy being a doctor. So I loved to write. I was writing a medical blog since 2004, but I never had enough time. So I'd be writing my blog posts literally in 30-minute increments in between lunch or late at night when my wife and kids were sleeping. I wouldn't edit them. I'd just throw them out there because I didn't have enough time. I would do public speaking, or I would do other types of storytelling and communication, things that were deeply important to me, but I never gave myself the permission to pursue them. So I got to this point where I started burning out and I realized this is no longer fulfilling me. This is not making me feel good anymore. How do I find a way out? And when I started doing that, I started looking to personal finances because I had convinced myself, well, if I just have enough money to leave medicine, it'll solve all my problems. Of course, I got to that point and realized that it was the beginning of a solution in many ways, but I had no idea who I wanted to be or what I wanted to fill my time with. And so it took me years to go from I can leave medicine to I've mostly left medicine and I filled my time with things I really love doing. And that just was a process.
What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned about building wealth through this process of really, you know, examining who you are and you know, taking your experience of being, you know, a hospice doctor and learning from other people?
So, you know, I've learned a few things about wealth. One is if you're looking at building wealth as building a certain money goal or net worth, it doesn't tend to serve you. Because if that becomes your purpose and your goal, one of two things happens. One is you get there and you're like, okay, what now? And so the next most obvious thing to do is to set a higher money goal. And so you get kind of on that same treadmill. We talk about the hedonic treadmill with buying things, but it's actually the same kind of hedonic treadmill with saving. Like if net worth becomes your goal, when you get there, you're not happy. You just want double. So that was one problem. The other issue with net worth being the goal is once you get there, you either want double or you become petrified that you're going to lose what you've gained. So that's loss aversion. And we get doubly afraid of this idea of losing what we have compared to never having it in the first place. So I learned for me that money goals aren't really great goals. And then I also learned that this idea, I love these words we use when we talk about wealth, right? So we talk about putting our money in the stock market at a young age so it can compound. And then over time, it can also pay dividends. And those dividends can lead to a richer, more wealthy life. I like looking at everything else not related to money and using the same words. So I think our education compounds. I think our experiences compound. I think our love and joy and relationships compound. And I think if we do those things well, they provide us also with dividends for the rest of our lives. And so I've started really looking at wealth in a much more holistic manner. I think there is a money component, but again, it's one of many things. And what ultimately leads us to feel like we've had A, enough, or B, wealth in life is not actually the money, but it's all those other things. Those other things that help us grow and learn and help us be our better selves.
Yeah, I mean, I can pretty much guarantee that probably all the people that you've you know, helped in a hospice situation, none of them, you know, their last breath has not been something about, oh, you know, I wish I had more money saved, or there isn't a money component. And I think, you know, it's hard to remember that when you're just in the slog of things day to day, and like, just, you know, everything's more expensive now, you know, eggs, groceries, gas, you know, everything's just a lot more stressful. But it's like trying to figure out how we can get our brains to a place that each day we can kind of refocus on what is actually important.
And what I do notice is when people do focus on things or money at the end, it's never about the money itself. It's, I wish I made more money so I could have paid for my grandson's college, right? And so if you think about it in that terms, we're kind of using money almost as an excuse, like, let go of the money part and let's work on our relationships now. You don't necessarily need the money. Yes, it's nice if you have enough money to afford a better life for those that you love. But what you're really saying is, I regret that I wasn't able to more fully express my love to these people in my life. And my argument would be that we're pretty able to do that regardless of how much money we have available in our lives right now. So why don't we do it?
Exactly, right? I mean, it's just so easy. I'm putting you on the spot a little bit to remember this, but you have this great exercise in your book, and I thought this would be super, super helpful to share this with people. It's called Practicing the Art of Subtraction, and you talk about what you call the reverse lottery test. And I just love this. I was wondering if you could just share a little bit of this. We've been talking about this from all different directions, but this was a really, I think, proactive way of thinking about, you know, what makes up your life and the place that money has.
So the reverse lottery test is this idea of imagining one day that you won the lottery and you had more money than you would ever need. How would that change your life? And so the idea is to actually go through your planner or your phone calendar or wherever you keep track of what you're doing, and to look at each activity and say, what would I keep and what wouldn't I keep if I had more money than I knew what to do with? And the reason why this is such an interesting concept is it really helps you value how you're spending your time now. And I think once you can really parse out what's important, what adds value to me, what adds to my sense of purpose, and what doesn't, then the next question becomes, well, what if you didn't win the lottery? What can we do to spend less of our time doing these things we don't want to do and add in more of these things we do want to do? And so this is the whole idea of, let's reverse the situation and actually put you where you think you want to be and visualize what that looks like and then try to bring that to where you are today. Because again, there's things we can control and there's things we can't control. We can build a path towards financial independence. We can build monetary wealth, but that takes time and there are ups and downs. And sometimes we get fired and sometimes we get a raise and sometimes we don't get a raise. I mean, that's really slow. But often how we utilize our time, what we put in those time slots we have every day, we have a little bit more control over that. And so how can we start making the move to really filling our time with things we want to immediately?
Yeah, I loved this exercise and I did it when I was reading the book, because, you know, I think you just can feel so out of control when it comes to money and your life. And you can feel like so many decisions are being made without your consent or your approval or your go ahead. And, you know, it's always that challenge to come around it a different way and to feel a sense of empowerment over your life and over your money situation. And so I'm just a big fan of doing exercises like this. They may feel a little silly, you know, on the onset, but I think, you know, what it does to your brain and even just how it kind of jogs you out of your, you know, your just sort of regular life where you feel just kind of like pulled along by what's happening, to feel like you have some sense of control and to feel like you can make some of these decisions. Like, to me, that feels almost like the secret of this all.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question the exercises in the book, as well as this concept of what if I was going to die tomorrow, next week, next month, they're meant to be jarring. Because unfortunately, I think in some senses, we need to be jarred, only because it's really easy to take the biggest, most important things in your life and push them aside and ignore them because it's painful, difficult, hard work. And part of my theory really is doing those things that are really, really, really important to us actually reminds us of our mortality. I mean, at some point we realize by doing this important stuff, what we're really saying is that life is short and I may never get to this, so I better do it now. It's really uncomfortable to do that. And so we will do just about everything we can to push off thinking about those important things. So the goal of my book and the goal of these exercises in some sense is to jar you into forcing you to think about these things now, not to scare you about your mortality, but to live a little more comfortably with it. Like, yes, life and time is limited. Instead of that scaring the heck out of us, how can that actually change our behaviors today to try to start building that life we want to have?
So we've talked about this idea of living a regret-free life and how do we start that now? We've talked about this idea of building well. So, you know, as we close here, let's go back to this idea of financial independence. How do we start building that now so that when we get to that moment that we're taking our last breath, we can feel good about the steps that we've taken throughout our life?
So in many ways, I define financial independence as actually living a life of purpose, identity, and connections. So step one is actually not to think about the finances for a short period of time and start really thinking about what purpose looks like in your life. Once you have an idea of what that is or what you really want to strive towards, then it's time to really start looking at your finances. And in the book, I talk about three big paths to financial independence. If we look at it under that lens of living a purposeful life, the first one is the one I took, the one that a lot of the traditional financial independence retire early people take, which is front-loading the sacrifice, right? So you can get a high-paying job, maybe one you like, maybe one you don't, grind it out, work really hard for 10 or 15 years or whatever it takes, especially if you start this at the beginning of your career, save lots of money, invest wisely, and at some point you'll have enough money. There are all sorts of ways to figure that out. We talk about 25 times your yearly spending or a 4% safe withdrawal rate. I'm not going to go into that here right now, but the idea is that we can calculate a number, get to that number, quit work, and kind of live a life full of purpose because now we have the time. So that's one way. And that can be a really good way for some people, especially if you're not worried about your current mortality. Some people say, hey, I'll work hard now if I can live it up for the next 30, 40 years after. Another path is to both work hard now, but also live a little and pursue a little more purpose. So that might be building up passive income and side hustles. These are jobs that you have to work really hard at in the short term, but within a few years, you can start getting this passive income, money that doesn't take as much work because you front-loaded some of the work, and start living a more purposeful life right away. Now, you might not be able to retire for a longer period of time, right? Because you know, you don't have that huge net worth saved up as in the traditional FIRE people do, but you are able to start living a life of purpose faster and sooner. And so that's like another path, passive income and side hustles. And lastly, what I call the passion play, the third path, and this is the one that takes you the longest to get to retirement, but you actually enjoy it from day one, is let's say you find a job that's full of passion for you that fills your sense of purpose and you happen to make money at it. In a sense, you're financially independent from day one. The minute you start working at the job, you're doing what you want to do with your life. It so happens to pay enough to cover your monthly bills. That is a great way and yet a third way to get to financial independence, but you're not going to retire maybe until you're 70, right? Because you're probably not saving up a lot. You're just covering your needs and doing that passion play. All three of those are fine. The idea, again, is figure out what purpose looks like in your life and then build a financial framework that works around your sense of purpose and is most fulfilling for you.
I really like what Jordan said about letting go of the money part. Yeah, I get it. I know it's important and yes, you need it, but your life is about so much more than just money. If I'm going to be honest, that's a lesson that has taken me really years to learn, and I'm still working through it. I'm still trying to understand how that actually works. You can learn more about Jordan at jordangrummett.com, where you can find links to his book, Taking Stock, and his podcast, Earn and Invest. I was even on a recent episode, so go check that out. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode, share it with a few friends right now. Tell them why they should take a listen. As always, you can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guest, as well as the sponsors who help make this show possible. I'll see you back here in a few days for a brand new episode.